pastor, I met Pastor Fisher, who was our interim pastor at our church, providing presence in the Bronx. And so when my friends had a timeshare and she invited me to come to Kona, I called Pastor Fisher. And we talked, and then he took me up to the airport because there was no flight out of the airport to Kona that day in the evening. And then I thought to myself, oh, maybe I can do some stories about it. And he said, I'll check for the pastor. And so here I am. And so it is a delight to be with you this morning. And then I had a delightful time at the 8 o'clock service, but even better with my wonderful teenagers. I am a retired young adult librarian, and I love teenagers. And so we had a wonderful time. I shared some biblical raps with them, and they shared stories about the films they had been looking at. And now I have some films, because I'm a person who loves those movies. So now I have a list of films that I will be looking at. Might be using it in my adult order and as a way to start discussion. I am retired, as I mentioned, librarian. I worked for the New York Public Library for 33 years, and then became a storyteller. And so it I was going along pretty well until a friend of mine from the Network of Biblical Storytellers came to my church, and we had a forum weekend, and I became involved in doing biblical storytelling also. And so this morning I'd like to share with you some parallel stories to the scripture lesson that I just read to you. I think of that theme in that story as gratitude, being thankful. So I have two boys and many times it was very difficult for them to pick up the phone and call their grandmother and thank her for a gift that she had sent them. I realized that is something that we really just, it's not in us. That's something that we can get to do just to say thank you to people. And when we don't, it does hurt their feelings because they feel that the gift is not appreciated. And so in this particular thing, Jesus was not very happy about the fact that they didn't come back to say thank you. I'm sure that along the way, those who had been healed thought about what had happened. Their life had been changed. But to come back and say thank you, it didn't happen. And so I would like to share with you some stories that talks about being thankful. And sometimes what happens when people say thank you, then other gifts are given to us. In the beginning of time, truth walked naked upon the earth, and he walked tall and proud. Everywhere he went, truth tried to share a great store of knowledge that he possessed. Each time he entered a village, he would call out, I am truth. Come, listen and learn from my teachings. No one listened to truth. Oh, sometimes children came running to sit at his feet and hear him talk, but their parents dragged them away, covering the children's eyes with their hands. Sometimes a young woman was drawn to truth, looking at him with wonder and awe. But her mother immediately reprimanded her and turned her aside. Young men looked at him with envy and fear and turned quickly away. Old women looked at him with fond smiles. And old men looked at him with chagrin. No one listened. He goes town to town, always at the same reception, and always alone. One day he came to the house of his sister, Story. Story lived in a fine and fancy house surrounded by flowers and fern trees and blossoming vines, like one of the houses I visited up in Cumberland, which is all looked like something just jumped out of the ground. A wide, shady porch stretched around the house, filled with comfortable rocking chairs, soft cushions, and hanging screens. The wide windows were hung with lace curtains and brocade drapes, and stained glass cast rainbows of light across the oriental carpet. Story sat in a wide, cold chair, dressed in a flowing chiffon gown. shimmered like her curly hair, tumbled about her shoulders and strewn with flowers and ribbons, and her fingers and throat and wrists and ankles were long and chains. When Sari saw her brother approaching, she waved to him in distress. "What's wrong? How can I help you?" "I don't think anyone can help me, Sari. I've gone to every village and town trying to share my knowledge, and no one will listen. I have such a good thing to say, but I can't make them listen." "You're wrong, my brother. I can help you. I know just what you need. Come with me." Sori led Truth in her bed, where she threw open trunks and hangers full of clothes. "Shoes, hats, and clothes. Dress yourself, Truth." Truth was horrified. "Dress myself in those boy things?" "Oh, Sori, I can't have you so silly." But Sori insisted, and Truth he put on purple trousers, made of velvet, a fine linen shirt with billowing sleeves, and a quilted vest soaked in linen jeans. He wrapped a flowing silken scarf around his neck and hung golden hoops from his ears. He put rings on every finger, a pair of silver shoes on his feet, and on his head he wore a hat with a long curving feather. When he thought he was finished, Sori wove ribbons into his hair, poked a flower into his lapel, and hung a sackcloth around his shoulders. At last, Sori was satisfied. "Now we're ready, children. Go back to the village and see what happens." Truth felt ridiculous. "Let me back, Sori, and set out once more to enlighten the world." After 1 year, he returned to Sori's house. "What happened to you, Jesus? You look much happier than the last time I saw you." "I really don't understand, Sori. But these silly clothes worked. Everywhere I went, people would gather around and listen eagerly to everything I had to say. It was wonderful what I was doing. I still have the same things to say. Why don't people listen now to what they rejected before?" "Don't you see," said Sori, "no one wants to listen to nature. Everyone wants to listen when it's closed in Sori. Truth and Sori. The crowd shouted down at him, his end was near at hand. man once met. Now, for a better tale, he said the lion and two kind-hearted Anthony's, he granted liberty. Both lion and lad won through. The lesson we might learn is when we help another, he will help us in return. The lion and the cubs played happily in the sunshine while their parents slept nearby. The day was highly hot, so hot that the cubs grew tired. One by one, they lay down to rest in the shade near their parents. But there was one who wanted to play a little more, and finally he got to him. And so he padded over to a shady spot at the edge of the jungle and went to sleep. Suddenly, a little mouse sat across the sleeping lion cub's paw, tickling him and waking him up. The lion jumped, snarled angrily. The mouse froze, too terrified to run away. "I'm sorry I woke you." The lion saw that there was only a promise and lifted the mouse. "Off you go," the lion said. "I won't hurt you." "Thank you for sparing my life," said the mouse. "One day I will repay your kindness." "I'm much bigger and stronger than you," said the lion. "A mouse can't help a lion." And proudly walked away. The mouse ran in the other direction. Years passed, and the cub grew into the biggest and strongest of all lions. He was now the king of the beasts. One hot day, when the lion headed for his resting spot, he fell into a trap. The more he struggled to get free, the more he entangled himself. The king of the beasts was caught. He gave a mighty roar. He roared with rage. He roared with fear. Then he roared with hell and hell. Animals of the day heard his roar and rushed to the side, and they pulled and struggled with that man. But they couldn't free the lion. Night fell, and the lion was still trapped in the net. The animals of the night terrified to see the catching lion, and they struggled and they pulled. But they could not free the mouse. Early the next morning, the mouse appeared. "You will open these shells?" The lion looked at the mouse. She answered, "No one can help me, at least of all you." The mouse started nibbling through the cord and went one after another. "Be patient, lion," she said. "Soon you will be free." Before long, the mouse had chewed a whole limit, and the lion pushed himself through. The lion was hurt. He bowed his head. "Thank you, little mouse," he said. "I will never get back at someone weaker or small than you. To repay your kindness, I promise I will always protect you." And so the lion and the mouse remained the best of friends until the end of the ages. Mom, Mom, won't you tell me a story? Tell me a story now. Papa, Papa, won't you tell me a story? Tell us a story around. Tell us a story around. Very good. A thirsty ant stopped poetry with a stream rushing down. The current carried it swiftly away. It seemed that it might drown. A dove picked up a little twig and knocked it near at hand. Ant crawled onto the bottom stick and drove it safely to land. Later, a hunter set in a trap. The dove believed his prey. The ant cracked up and stung his leg, and the hunter ran away. Remember, sister. Remember, brother. One will turn. I'd like to close with one of my favorite songs. When I became a great grandmother, I thought a lot about my great grandmother. I did not have a grandmother around to tell them stories. Her name was Rebecca Wiley, and she came from Savannah, Georgia, and she raised my mother and my aunt. And she lived until she was 114 years old. So I was a teenager when she died. And she used to tell stories. When people asked her about her life in Savannah, she didn't say too much about that because that was very difficult. But she did tell me one story that I do remember. She was enslaved. And she was on the plantation around when she was about 12 years old working. And the owner of the plantation came up and said to her, "Rebecca, you are free." Can you imagine what my grandmother, great-grandmother, Rebecca Wiley, must have felt free? She probably felt, what does that mean? And so her husband, my great-grandfather, my mother told me most of them didn't understand him because he spoke the African language. So I never met him. But I always think of Mom. And especially when I became a great-grandmother on my birthday, when my grandmother called me and told me that Lonnie was born on my birthday. And so when she was 7 and I was 70, we celebrated every time we saw each other because it was a momentous occasion. And now she's 10 years old. And so I'd like you to join with me in Grandma's Hands that was written in the 60s. And when I point to you and you say, "Grandma's Hands, Grandma's Hands, Grandma's Hands, Grandma's Hands," back in church on Sunday mornings, "Grandma's Hands, they attack the wind so well, Grandma's Hands, used to issue out a warning." She said, "Dad, don't you run so fast, you might slip on a piece of glass, there might be snakes there in that glass." Grandma's Hands, Grandma's Hands, super long mother. Grandma's Hands used to hurt sometimes and swell. Grandma's Hands used to lift her face and tell her, she said, "Hey, Grandma, in a sense, that you really love her hand. Put yourself in Jesus' hands." Grandma's Hands, Grandma's Hands. If I can.